Hello, and welcome to Knitwit, Rantings of a Rabid Knitter, a storytelling podcast with occasional knit bits. My name is Carrie, a.k.a. Autumn Breeze, and this is Episode 63, Stereotypes. I have so much I want to talk to you about today. So, I hope you don't mind if I'm somewhat rambling on about various topics, but this is going to be more or less a three-part episode. First part is, I want to give you an update on the red sweater. I realized the other day that I have not told you guys how the red sweater is doing for quite a long time. Shame on me. I am just not used to sharing my knitting, I guess. The red sweater is going very well. I had a little bit of a bump in the road. I had quit on the sleeves and grafted the sleeve together and tried it on and realized I didn't like it. I didn't like how tight the sleeves were. I wanted something a lot looser. So I had to take out the grafting, put it back on the needles, put the yarn back together, and then knit for another inch or so. I tried that on, and I liked the shape a lot better. I liked the fit. So I grafted that back together, and then I went along with the body, and the body's been going very well. I am down to the hip area, and I decided I wanted set-in pockets. So, now I've divided it into three pieces. I've added on a little bit in the front for an edge facing to the pocket. I am adding stitches on both sides of the back that will make the pocket, and it's coming along. This, of course, is now being a little bit tedious because I'm increasing and I have three balls of yarn going at the same time. It's also gotten very big and bulky, so it's not something that I can easily carry around with me to knit on, so it has become more or less a stay-at-home knitting project. But it's coming along. I'm almost positive I'm going to have enough yarn to finish it. And I, in fact, found some of this yarn in another area of my stash. I had wound off some, and I was going to make, I think, probably a shawl or a scarf with it. Obviously, I didn't like how it turned out, so I just let it be. And I had only doubled it at that point. So when I found that ball, it was like, oh yeah, I'm definitely going to have enough to finish this sweater. The next thing I want to do is give you an Easter present. And I know you're going to say, Carrie, it's Easter when you're recording this. How can you give me an Easter present when it's going to be after Easter when I listen to it? This is one of those presents that's almost better after Easter. I want to tell you how I dye yarn with Easter egg dye. Now, I will tell you up front, I play with dyeing. I am not at all serious when it comes to dyeing yarn. In order to be serious about it, you have to be very meticulous. To get a particular shade or particular color is very, very difficult. I had one woman come up to me and talk to me one day, and she did needlepoint, and she was doing a nature scene for her husband, who was a naturalist, and she took him to the yarn store, and he declared that absolutely none of the reds were an appropriate color for the cardinal. So she asked me if she could dye the yarn herself and how to dye it herself, in which I kind of looked at her a little aghast because I never try to get a particular color. It is very difficult to do that. In order to get a particular shade of a particular color, you have to be so anal. It depends upon the water temperature, the acidity of the water, so how much vinegar or other acids you add to the bath. It depends upon the humidity in the room, how much dye you add to how much wool you have. I mean, it is so difficult to do to get a particular shade that even yarn companies don't promise that they can do it. That's why they have dye lots. So I don't ever try to get a particular color or a particular shade. I just play. And if you would like to play with me, I'll tell you how I do it. First thing you need is some skeins or some hanks of an animal fiber. These dyes will only take permanently to a protein fiber. So you've got your wools, mohair, angora, alpaca, llama, silk. There's all kinds of different animal fibers out there. So grab yourself a hank or a skein of white, gray, tan, pastels, basically any color that you want to put color on top of, because my method always leaves a little bit of the original yarn showing through. Now, and you may wonder, are you really saying skeins? And yes, I am really saying skeins, because what I do with whole skeins of yarn is I just throw them in the dye bath. And then you get a very mottled effect, at which I absolutely love. Plus, the outside of the skein will take more of the dye, so it will be mottled in the inside, and then you'll get a more solid color on the outside, which I think is way fun to do. So anyway, once you have your yarn and you get your Easter egg dyes, I like to get the tablets, but you can get any kind of dyes that you want to get. I think it's best to buy it after Easter when they all go on sale for half price or even at times 75% off. First thing you need to do is get some sort of a container for this dyeing process. This can be a bag, or it can be a plastic container or a glass container. I do not recommend metal. Also, these dyes are non-toxic, so you don't have to worry about using your items that you would use for cooking in, but I do have special tubs that I use only for dyeing. You need to also take some safety procedures in mind, and mainly that's to protect your hands. Since these are protein dyes, they will dye your skin, so you want to be sure that you have a pair of rubber gloves around to put on as well. First thing, soak the yarn. Put it in some warm water, more or less as hot as you can get from your tap, or a little bit less if that's scalding. You just want to get the yarn absolutely saturated with water. So put it in your container, put some water in to cover it, and that water will fastly disappear into the yarn. As it's soaking up the water, go ahead and boil some water. I use my hot water maker to do this, but you can use a kettle or you can boil it in a pot, however you want to do to get your hot water. Once you get your water boiling, then add it to your yarn. You want to completely cover the yarn with the water. Then add some vinegar or some lemon juice. Vinegar is a little bit stronger acid. It will give you a little bit darker color than the lemon juice, or if you don't have any of that on hand, that's fine. You don't have to acidify the water. It just helps a little bit in it taking up the dye. Now, I add one or two glugs of white vinegar into the dye bath. And yes, I said a glug. It's, you know, you just kind of turn the bottle and it goes glug, glug, and you go, okay, that's good. Like I said, I'm not very meticulous on this. Then you add the Easter egg dye. You just drop it in. I try to get it so that it's completely in the water, but next to the yarn. If you, by chance, like I do occasionally, drop it onto the yarn and it's not completely in the water, I just reach in and push it over so that it's into the water. And then you walk away for 2 or 3 hours. I like to use 2 tablets per hank of yarn. You can use more, you can use less. I also like to dye 2 skeins at the same time, so that if I decide that I want to knit something that requires 2 skeins, I will have it, and it will be more or less matching yarn. You can dye single skeins, multiple skeins, whatever you want to do. You can add more dye or less dye. I like to, if I'm doing a pastel, I like to dye it with a complementary color, not a contrasting color. If you use a contrasting color, then what you will get is more of a brown than really having the colors shine through, because the base color will add to the dye color that you're adding in. And if they're contrasting, as in if you had a yellow yarn and you added a purple to it, you would get all of the primary colors in there, the yellow, the red, the blue, and then you would have basically brown. So if I have a yellow yarn, then I would add a blue and a green, or maybe a red and an orange, something like that, to add more color to it. That's how I play with dyeing and Easter egg dyes. If you do try this out, please drop me a line and tell me how it worked for you. I really would like to know what other people have done with this technique of dyeing. Now, today's story isn't really a story, it's probably a little bit of a rant, but I get so annoyed at some of the stereotypes that are out there. I was watching Nitty Gritty on TV, and Vicky just sometimes pisses me off. And you may say, well, Carrie, why do you continue to watch it if she pisses you off? Well, the reason why I continue to watch it is because there aren't that many knitting shows out there. And I think that there's always more to learn in knitting. And I'm anxious to see how other people are doing different techniques and to learn new things. I learn best by watching someone do it and hearing someone explain it to me. I can buy books, and I have bought books, and I have lots of books, and I have learned some things from books, but It is so much faster and easier for me to learn by listening. I do watch the show and I do occasionally learn some stuff, even in some of the basic patterns that she has. There's always something new to learn from her experts that she brings in. But she said something the other day that just irked me. And she said, "All knitters like to get together and knit with each other." And I said, "No. No, I'm sorry. I'm an antisocial bitch. I like to stay at home and knit by myself. I don't go and meet people at coffee shops and knit. And I'm not a knitster. I am in no way, shape, or form could ever be confused with the hipster crowd. I am 43 years old. Short, heavy set, and incredibly introverted. I have been knitting for a long time, let's just say, since I started when I was 7. And I put it down, sure, for 1 or 2 years here and there, but I knitted when I was in high school. I brought my knitting to class with me. When I graduated from high school, the historian made the prediction that by the time I was 30, I would have learned how to knit with my feet and I would have made baby blankets for the entire world. I didn't make her expectations, but yes, I'm still knitting, and I have always more or less been identified as a knitter. I knitted when I was in college. I took knitting with me to classes. And this was in the 80s. There weren't a whole lot of other people doing that. I got strange looks when I went into yarn stores. I got the, "Are you sure you know what you're doing, Missy?" attitudes. But now it seems like I'm an old fogey. And everyone who knits is supposed to be young and beautiful and oh so hip. And I'm not. And I won't ever be. Also, I am what is considered to be a social introvert. I love people. One-on-one, I will talk to you forever. But you put me in a crowd, and I'm sorry, a crowd is 3 people or more, I'm not as talkative. And the more people that are in the room, the less likely I will be to talk at all. I am so shy that in some ways it's a detriment to me. Now, if push comes to shove, I will perform for people, and that is not the same as interacting with people. If you get me in a room full of people and it is loose, just socialize with each other, guys, I will do one of 2 things. I will go stand in the corner and try to disappear, or I will start telling jokes and stories and entertaining people. That is not really socializing. It's me putting on a mask so I can deal with the situation. So her whole thing that knitters are such social people just really irked me. And it seems to me that there are so many stereotypes out there about what knitting is all about. And I don't get it. There are so many different kinds of knitters out there in the world. And yes, I will talk about knitting to anyone. I have had conversations about knitting in several different languages. I have talked to middle-aged Russian women about knitting with just gesturing, graph paper, and pointing and doing sign language as far as knitting. I have had Chinese grandmothers drag their granddaughters over to talk to me about knitting. I have talked to teenage boys about knitting, and I have also talked to 6-foot-tall, 300-pound, middle-aged men about knitting. I love to talk about knitting, and I will talk about knitting to anyone and everyone. In my mind, there isn't a single shape of what a knitter looks like, and it annoys me that people are saying that knitters are of a particular type. To me, that is as bad as the stereotype of the grandmotherly knitter with a dozen cats in her house. People knit for all different kinds of reasons, and they knit all kinds of different things. I think it's wonderful that there's a new resurgence of knitting, and I think some of the patterns that are coming out of it are fantastic. A lot of them I'm probably not going to be making for myself. They just don't seem to have enough fabric to cover the bountifulness of my body. But I love that knitting's out there. It just annoys me that people are still trying to categorize knitters as one type or another. And I still see this a little bit in the shop owners and the vendors. Last year, when I went to Maryland Sheep and Wool Festival, I met up with some people from a guild, from the Spinners Guild that I'm a member of. One of our younger members had found himself on his own. He's about 14, 15 years old. He's probably well over 6 feet, and I think he outweighs me by quite a bit, so I'd put his weight at 250 to 300 pounds. So he's a big guy. And I ran into him in one of the tents. He was trying on some slippers, and he said, "Hey, you're on your own?" And I said, "Yeah, I'm on my own." He says, "Can I tag along with you for a while?" And I said, "Sure." And then I found, oh man, having a 6 foot around is kind of fun, because he was reaching and pulling things down from the shelves for me to look at and touch and feel, and he'd put them back for me, and he was wonderful company. We were wandering around talking about various things. He was trying to find some very special fiber to spin up for his mother to make her a scarf for the reenactments that they do. So he wanted a natural color, and he wanted a very soft and elegant fiber for his mother. So he was on a very specific search. Well, we came into this one tent, and they had some natural brown cashmere that was combined with some natural colored merino. It was beautiful stuff, and it had a little bit of a high price on it. He asked the vendor how much it was, and she turned to me and she answered, and I pointed to him, in which she kind of got a little flabbergasted. I mean, what, this teenage boy is a spinner? Yes, he is. He is a wonderful spinner. He makes yarn that is glorious, so fine and even. Yes, he is a wonderful spinner. So she answered him, and he said, I want to make a little chalette scarf for my mother. And she turned and looked at me. And I said, no, I'm not his mother. I'm just his friend. And then she really gave me a weird look, because probably a middle-aged woman shouldn't have a teenage boy as her friend. But then I was like, really, Saint, oh my God, what the hell am I supposed to say? I'm like, no, I'm a friend of the family. His mother, it's... And you know, Les was more or less oblivious to the whole thing. He didn't get the fact that the store clerk was not responding to his questions, because he was so engrossed in the fiber, he didn't notice that she was answering me and not him. But oh, I was getting pissed. I was furious. I had run into this type of bigotry whenever I go into the hardware store and I'm looking for something, and Wayne goes with me, and I ask about a part or a tool, and they answer him, in which case he usually says something completely silly about the whole tool thing, because really he doesn't know that much about tools and automobile parts or anything. So then he wanders off and he comes back and with a, ooh, Carrie, look, it comes in purple. I love the man. And then the clerks seem to be comfortable with talking to me instead of him. But I just didn't expect that type of bigotry from the fiber industry. I was disappointed. Hopefully the world will continue to broaden its horizons and accept people in all different shapes and sizes, ethnicities, colors, genders, with a diverse amount of interest in even the fiber arts. Thank you for coming by and listening to me rant and ramble on. If you have any comments about this story or any of my other stories, please come by the website, which is autumnbreezedesigns.com. If you would rather send me an email message, my email address is Carrie, and that's C-A-R-R-Y, .autumnbreeze@gmail.com. I have a voicemail number. My voicemail box number is 206-666-5775. I hope you have a great week. Take care. Bye.